Hello, this is Left Out on WRCT with Danny Slater and Robert Harper. That music was Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet, a small selection from that beautiful piece. So now we want to talk. Oh, you want to take the call first? Yep. Let's take the call first. Go ahead, caller.
Hi.
Hello there.
I didn't hear the beginning of the show, but I was calling to talk about the Schwarzenegger-Weider connection.
Oh, okay, well.
And the liberal media, that is. The supposed liberal media,
mm-hmm.
and how they control so many of the magazines and all the ad campaign. You wonder why Schwarzenegger is not being criticized. It's the same thing with Bush, because they own a lot of advertising and all the money.
I would say that's certainly true.
What about Weider? Weider in terms of as being a publisher of muscle magazines?
And Schwarzenegger and Weider were partners for many, many years, and Weider either just sold or is about to sell a lot of the stock and all the magazines that they have, Men's Health and things like that.
Yeah.
And he's completely behind Schwarzenegger, of course.
I see.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
Well, thanks for pointing that out. I have to say I agree with you.
Yeah, I think that was on Democracy Now! Or FAIR.
Okay.
Right.
Well, it sounds like you're going to be listening to Democracy Now! When we have it on the air 5 days a week. So thank you for calling.
Not at 8 a.m.
Okay.
Put it on in the afternoon.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye.
So our next topic of discussion is the Howard Dean's campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination. Certainly by now, many of you, our listeners, have heard of Howard Dean. He's gained a lot of attention. He's currently the governor of Vermont. He's gained a lot of attention because of the nature of his campaign, which is that he's been primarily relying on the internet as a means for publicizing campaign activities and press releases and so on. But more importantly, more significantly, as a means of raising money. And he surprised everyone by being far and away ahead of the other Democratic candidates who one presumed would have greater influence with potential donors in raising quite a substantial sum of campaign money. And that really is the thing that gives him a place at the table. Now, the question is why is Howard Dean seemingly so popular, and in particular measured by how people spend their money? I think that's it's a much more telling, much more accurate gauge of people's views to see what they do with their money than it is to see how they answer your question when you pop in on them on the street. So I think there have been a number of factors in the Dean campaign that have led to his popularity. Probably the biggest one is his opposition to the war from the beginning. All of the other main Democratic candidates, including Kerry and Lieberman, for example, and Gephardt, were voted in favor of the war in Iraq. There are a few notable exceptions. Bob Graham in Florida, and Dennis Kucinich from Ohio, and Howard Dean. So certainly one aspect of it is his opposition to the war. The other is that I find particularly refreshing is the direct way in which he's addressed many of the policies of the Bush administration. And Danny has a few of these.
Well, I just wanted to mention a story that I read on the Truthout website. The statement by Howard Dean back in July, and I'll put a link on my website for the show about this if you want to read the whole thing. It's a long statement. It started out talking about the basically the lie that Bush told about the uranium importation from Niger, but then went on to point out that that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of misleading statements by Bush, or outright lies, if you want to use the proper term. So this is about a 7 or 8 page document with maybe 100 assertions ranging from the economy to education to healthcare to homeland security to the environment to veterans affairs with incorrect statements by Bush. So a couple examples. Bush says under the economy, he says my jobs and growth plan would reduce tax rates for everyone who pays income tax. The truth is, 8.1 million lower and middle income tax payers who pay billions of dollars a year in income taxes will receive no tax reduction under his legislation. In the State of the Union address, he said, we will not pass along our problems to other Congresses, to other presidents, and to other generations. Well, What actually happened was they've had the most incredible deficit, explosion of the deficit of any administration, even bigger than the explosion that Ronald Reagan caused. Those are two of the examples. There's examples on the environment. He says, our clear skies legislation, when passed by Congress, will significantly reduce smog and mercury emissions, as well as stop acid rain. It will put more money directly into programs to reduce pollution so as to meet firm national air quality goals. Well, that's just nonsense. The clear skies plan would generate millions more tons of smog-producing nitrogen oxides and allow three times more mercury emissions than the current law. So it goes on like this, and it's, I think, an excellent speech, and I was very happy to read this. But if you look at the coverage in the mainstream media of Dean, New York Times, for example, you won't see these statements. You won't see what Dean is actually saying published in the New York Times. What you'll see is a strategy discussion. How is Dean doing with the voters of a certain state? How is he going to get the minority voters? Oh, there's always white people working for Dean. How is he going to get the minorities? And so on. All these strategic things. There's never the question of what he's saying compelling? Is what he's saying true? How does it compare what are his programs? What is he advocating? Is it good or bad? What impact would those programs have? And so on. That's not what they discuss. Anyway, that was about all I had to say about that. Bob.
Yeah, so I agree with that, is that Dean is not really taken that seriously in the mainstream media. But more importantly, as you say, the mainstream media makes the whole thing into a circus and is not really concerned with the substance of the matter, but rather just the political machinations of who can screw who and who seems to be on top at the moment and who said the most clever thing at the latest debate and so on and so forth. However, there is an article in the Washington Post today that discusses something that I think is important, which is which was actually began to be raised by some of Dean's rivals, and so I think it is worth looking into, which is the question of whether or the fact that, I should say, that Dean has switched his views over the last 10 years or so on various critical issues, including Social Security, in particular the retirement age, on free trade, and particularly the NAFTA Accord, and on the Cuban trade embargo. So the question that comes up is that how important is it that a candidate over the course of his or her career has changed his or her views on, serious political matters? So unfortunately, the Dean campaign has tended to minimize the changes of opinion. But I think that some of these are quite clear cut. So, for example, I think it's quite clear cut that in 1995 that Howard Dean was siding with Newt Gingrich, of all people, in Medicare reform and reducing the cost of Medicare, which really boils down to reducing benefits for senior citizens, health care benefits for senior citizens. Similarly, he's been in favor of raising the retirement age and now has changed in order to deal with the Social Security shortfalls and perhaps you might say also to deal with the realities of extended lifetime and so on that we enjoy because of our of better health care over the decades since Social Security was initiated. Though the question is that I have in my mind is I am disappointed that they would somehow try to downplay these changes. The question is, how important is it? And does this reflect, the thing I'm concerned about is does this reflect political expediency that he just changes his views according to what seems to be the winning argument at the moment? Or is it simply that over time, people's opinions change? Danny, what do you think?
Well, yeah, that is a good question because on certain issues, I'm afraid that a politician simply can't really afford to take the moral position. I mean, if, for example, at the risk of being saying something outrageous, support of Israel is an example of that.
Yes,
I personally think that the U.S. should probably really scale back its support of Israel until some major changes are made. But that's not something that a major candidate can say, even if he or she believes that.
Yeah, he's been forced to backpedal on his statement that he thought we should take an even have an even-handed take an even-handed approach in dealing with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It's rather shocking if you sit back and think about it for a moment that someone who is asking for an even-handed and fair treatment in foreign affairs is somehow pilloried as being having a completely unacceptable opinion. I think the reason is that this is portrayed as being, you know, a code word for being anti-Israel, and which in many cases is unfortunately equated with being anti-Semitic. And these are really, these things simply do not follow. But Dean has certainly backed off on that issue and tries now to compare himself to Clinton and to adopting the policies that Clinton had adopted, which certainly I and perhaps Danny would agree with. But the other issues that to do with Medicare and so forth are, I think, also, you know, important around NAFTA, the treatment of the NAFTA Accord. And you do sense a whiff of the politician there when someone who is really a strong NAFTA advocate and now knows that as a matter of political calculation needs the labor vote is sort of backpedaling on that.
So what is his position on NAFTA?
Well, he was just a strong supporter of NAFTA and for opening free trade with China, but that certainly has implications for particularly working class Americans because of the opening of the borders and reduction of tariffs introduces competition that wasn't previously there.
Yeah. We have a call, but we only have a few minutes left in the show, so caller, go ahead.
Hi. This is just sort of an abstract observation, but don't you think that it's sort of a sign of an intelligent person to look at the issues and maybe allow the possibility of changing his mind once in a while, which is a bit different from vacillating? That's all I have to say.
Well, I think that's a very good point, and really that's exactly the question I wanted to raise, is whether this criticism is a valid criticism or simply reflects that someone is thinking about the issues in a situation where now they have to think about them rather seriously because he could very well be involved in a decision-making capacity, whereas earlier it was more a matter of his opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you for taking my call. I'll let you continue.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, regarding NAFTA, well, that's a whole other can of worms that we'll have to get into on a different show probably, but NAFTA, the concept of free trade, the abstract concept, is very good and it's easy to justify. But when you look at the details of what NAFTA actually is, there are gigantic cans of worms in there, such as Chapter 11, which allows foreigners to override local environmental or health regulations because it, quote, interferes with business. And it's a totally outrageous, totally undemocratic thing. Anyway, but I don't want, that's a tirade
right.
I don't want to go into
it's,
right
it's
now.
It's an asymmetric situation because the health and welfare environmental regulations in Mexico are far weaker than they are here. All right, I think it's time to wrap up. Our time is up for this week. Thank you for listening to Left Out. This is WRCT 88.3 FM. I'm Robert Harper.
I'm Danny Slater.
And thank you for listening.
You're listening to a production of WRCT Public Affairs. The opinions contained within are solely those of the participants. Questions and comments can be addressed to WRCT Pittsburgh, 5000 Forbes Avenue, Pittsburgh, PA, or call 621-0728.